Happy Fascism Friday, Dan.
Same to you, Mark.
It's like, you know how like for Christians, Sunday is the Lord's Day. This is like the devil's day. Because it's Fascism Friday.
That's right.
And this is February 2nd, 2021. And this is episode 167.
Except it's not February 2nd.
February 5th. I looked at the corner of my computer screen and saw the little two there. And maybe my brain went European for a second and thought the two is the day instead of the month.
There you go.
It's February 5th.
It's February.
Either that or we recorded this 3 days ago and we're just releasing it now. No one can know for sure.
Yes.
Not really.
Even we don't really know for sure anymore what day or time it is.
I don't even know who I am. I think I'm Mark Van Sunik. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
Yeah, and I'm Daniel Wolper. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. Good morning, Kathleen. I hope all is well down in Missouri.
Missouri needs all the help it can get these days with all your politicians. And speaking of politicians, right. We're talking about the politics of resentment.
Yeah. And hello, Asher from the Philippines. Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. Yes, the politics of resentment. And hey, Tamika. I really love it when people say hi to us at the beginning of the episode.
It's a nice way to start the morning.
It is. Makes me feel happy, even on Fascism Friday.
even on a day such as this. Today we're talking about guest rights. I mean, it's the 8,325th day of March 2020. Yeah. Yes,
that's true. Yeah, and I mean, we already had this topic lined up, but I do want to do an episode on that article that Gus tagged us in about Nevada trying to let companies create their own cities.
Yes.
Which is really hilarious to me because obviously whoever introduced that never heard of the company town. Like this is actually an old idea. It didn't go well.
Just, you know, all you have to do is Google 16 Tons by Tennessee Ernie Ford and listen to that song and it tells you all you need to know about the idea of a company owning a town. I mean, I've never lived in West Virginia. And that song was written way before I was born, yet I know. Or watch the movie Matawan, which is also like another one of these. Capitalism. it's great. So we're talking about resentment today. And to me, resentment is this idea of feeling offended because something seems unfair. And so fundamentally, like in our society, people have this tendency to reject anything that doesn't seem fair within a kind of a capitalist way of seeing things. So usually it's the complaint, somebody's getting something for free.
Right.
Like what?
Getting something for nothing.
I had to go into horrible debt to pay for my wife's cancer. I don't want anyone else with cancer getting their medical bills covered. Like that kind of.
Right. It's just the fascinating logic. You know, it's sort of the logic of the fraternities and sororities, you know, it's this hazing logic, right? It's like, I was tortured as a pledge, therefore I want to torture all pledges. It never occurs to people to say, I hated being tortured as a pledge. Maybe we shouldn't do this. I mean, it's an interesting psychology, right? So the one particular article that got us going on this had to do with our sister city, St. Paul.
Across the river.
Across the river, across the Great Divide. And so they have been running an experiment a little pilot project for the last 10 months or so, experimenting with a form of universal basic income.
Yeah, and, UBI is another one of these controversial topics.
Yeah,
giving away free money.
Yeah. The Yang Gang, they're into this. And so they've been, they identified a number of families, a couple hundred maybe, you know, all of whom were existing below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. And all of whom, by the way, had members of their family who were working, right? So that's an important thing, because there's always this trope of, well, these people are poor because they're lazy.
It's the right. It's the recycling of the 80s welfare queen trope.
Yeah. And they were giving these families $500 a month. And, you know, and so now they've been collecting the data on this and how the program is working. And, you know, not surprisingly, it's working really well. And so these families are doing better in all kinds of different metrics, including how their kids are doing at school and housing stability and all that good stuff. So there was an article about that in the Star Tribune, and I decided, not because I'm a masochist, but it's kind of a research project, to read the comments. The
dreaded comments.
The dreaded comments. And by the way, the Star Tribune is the worst. I mean, the Star Tribune commenters are, I mean, if you want to see like peak Midwestern whiteness, just get on the Star Tribune and read the comments. And they pretty much were all just horrible. Just like, you know, these people are going to be dependent on the government. These people, you know, I didn't get anything for free. They shouldn't get anything for free. I work hard for everything I have. These, you know, lazy, blah, blah, blah. It was all the stuff that was totally predictable.
I can see that work ethic turned you into a noble creature, Carl. They should suffer like me, because I want them to end up just as bitter and horrible inside as I am. That's right. What I'm hearing when someone complains like that.
Well, yeah. And so that's the interesting thing, is that the people that make these complaints, and I think I mentioned this a while back in one episode, but reading this very interesting book on the sociology of relationships between white people and native peoples in Canada. And it was the same kind of stuff, you know, all the white people were like, oh, you know, the Indians just want stuff for free, they're lazy, blah, 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 you know, I work hard, I pay taxes, they don't do shit, you know, all that kind of thing. And what's very interesting to me is how the white folks that are making these comments seem to have very limited awareness in terms of assessing themselves and their own states of mind. You know, and again, it's kind of this hazing thing. Like, they never think to themselves, well, I'm miserable, so maybe there's something wrong with the way I'm viewing and approaching things. It's always, well, I'm kind of miserable, so I'm just going to be pissed off at these other people.
It's funny, like, I remember one of the comments we got, I don't know how many, maybe a couple months ago, we did an episode where we talked about how white middle classness is driven by misery like this. And one of the mm-hmm. people commented, like, basically calling us libtards for assuming that these people are miserable because they love their lives. And I'm like, I don't think that's, maybe individually, but I think there's enough data to suggest that middle class whiteness is a miserable existence.
There's a huge amount of data to show
like, just like how it's amazing the proportion to which you're like, yeah, our military is going to go kick ass, is usually the extent to which you're actually afraid all the time.
Yeah.
Right. Because the gun culture is not driven by optimism and love. It's driven by fear. Yeah. And this sort of like not wanting other people to have nice things isn't driven by generosity of spirit or grace or the fact that you, a sinner, have been saved by grace. It's driven by all these horrible sorts of like merit, like twisted meritocracy ideas and judgment and resentment.
And also a real blind spot to how much, in fact, you have been helped by the government.
Yes.
Right. So that's the other really interesting part about this. And just before we were talking about Northwest Minnesota and some of the politics up there. And, you know, one of the things that was just that continues to amaze me more regularly when I lived there full time, but we still have our retreat center up there. I'm still up there a fair amount. So, you know, is how all of these farmers and farm families whose existence is completely dependent on the government, completely dependent. How one, they will never admit that. And then two, how they will turn around and look at an experiment like this, which is actually costing far less than the amount that they're getting from the government. And they will look at an experiment like this and go, oh, these terrible, poor, lazy people. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's the other fascinating bit to all of this, is that there seems to be a very, very particular and distinctive understanding of what government help means. And it usually seems to correlate pretty well with if it's white people, it's okay to get government stuff. And if it's not white people, it's not okay.
I mean, you also see this with the minimum wage conversation.
Right.
Right. So like this idea that burger flippers shouldn't make the same as paramedics. Paramedics only get $15 an hour. Now you want these lowly burger flippers to get enough to live? which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because those people eat at that burger flipper place. they just don't value it because there's this baked in sort of meritocracy. Like, who is it that determines, like, obviously a paramedic is in a more crisis role. So I'm not saying that they should necessarily even get paid the same. Like that's not even the argument. The argument is everyone should get paid enough, but somehow the idea of someone that you look down upon mm-hmm. being able to be sufficient with some assistance, it's just bizarre to me that that's disgusting to some folks. Like, what's at stake here? I feel like it's part of it is often when I talk to people who encounter homeless folks, the biggest reason they don't want to give is because they don't want to get taken advantage of. It's not even like this, you know, I don't agree with this logic, but I at least understand the logic of I don't want to give them that money because they're going to use it for bad things. Like, okay, I don't agree with that, but there's at least a straightforwardness to that logic. But the I don't want to give it to them because they might take advantage of me. They could be lying to me and you might not even need it that much. That's a weird kind of way of thinking. Like this fear that somehow someone could benefit disproportionately from your generosity is enough to make you think, I don't want anyone help anyone. I'd rather they be homeless and die than they take advantage of me.
Well, and the way that the negativity is always directed downward.
Yes.
Right. So it's never, you know, so it's never like, okay, you know, giving $600 to people suffering during the pandemic, you know, why is it that that's bad? And yet there's no similar critique of giving $1 trillion to the top 500 wealthiest people in this country during the pandemic. Like, why is that not bad? Right. So the direction of the ire is always downward. And
well, they might be pissed off at that wealthy people, but they don't have a disgust towards it. It's again this disgust.
Yeah, they don't have a disgust, but they also don't there's no motivation to punish them from a policy point of view. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean it's there's never like, okay, you know, we need to have a wealth tax. We need to have, you know, higher income bracket, right? But it is always
they do drug tests.
Yeah, we really
like we should make billionaires who get some sort of subsidy have to do daily drug tests.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, and And I just feel like, so again, so much of this cycles back to this religious sensibility, right? So that there really is baked in, really from, you know, a very early time. I mean, Jesus was battling this all the time, right? That if you're on the bottom end of things, there must be something wrong with you. God is looking at you unfavorably. You must have done something bad, or your family did something bad. And, you know, if you're the prince in the castle somewhere, you know, you're God's smiling on you. And so, you know, you somehow deserve what you've got.
It's so ironic. I bring this up all the time in various places that, again, this is a weird Protestant way of looking at things, American Protestant way of looking at things, that God saved me from hell and gave me the abundant gift of eternal life. But fuck you if you need money. Grace is some sort of like existential, spiritual, cosmic thing that should not touch your tangible life. Which is a bizarre heresy to me, because like we, yeah. Comments are coming in. Mark writes, white privilege is enshrined so deeply in the U.S. systems that we whites have a really difficult time probing deeply enough to recognize how much benefit we gain from them.
Yeah.
That's true. CK writes, I wonder if this sense of resentment isn't a form of generational whiteness that stems back from when the construct of whiteness began in 1681, when white slaves were elevated above slaves of color. Yeah, I mean, totally the sort of pitting some groups against others is tied in here. There's whiteness, there's class stuff. There's also, like, I've seen this, different generations of immigrants I've noticed. Like, there's this sort of a message like, well, if you made it and now you're a citizen, you should hate undocumented people because look at what you had to go through. Like there's this sort of weird toxic way of thinking gets.
Yeah, which is another hazing idea, you know, and you see this all up and down the ladder, right? I mean, in the medical world, and this was something that Deborah's dad was really involved with. You know, so in medical education, you had this whole thing where, you know, where you had to work way too much and, you know, residents were just zombies because they hadn't slept in days and all this kind of thing. And, you know, and eventually there was a case in New York where a woman died. And, you know, probably because the resident was basically asleep and gave her, you know, not good treatment. And so out of that, came these limitations on the number of hours that residents had to work and that medical students said it could work. And it was amazing how many old-time doctors were against this, right? And it was the same exact argument, like, well, I had to do this. You know, when I was in my surgery residency, I was up for 300 hours in a row. You know, why can't these youngins do that? And yeah, so that this hazing kind of mentality just really gets baked in. It's like the compassion arrow gets reversed somehow, right? It's like, you know, I don't learn from a negative experience and become compassionate towards others. I have a negative experience and I become more hateful towards others, right? Like I take my own resentment and I project it out onto other people. And it's really unfortunate.
It really is. Mark writes, the county in Kentucky with the highest per capita participation in entitlement programs is 92% white. The overwhelming number of participants are white. And this is how it works, though. Like, so I remember when I was younger, we were on, you know, food stamps and other kinds of assistance. And I was very conservative. And so I simultaneously felt ashamed about that, but then also felt like we were more deserving of it. Mm-hmm. Because we weren't like those other sorts of white trash people. We were the kind of people who needed a little bit of help because we were on bad times and we would make up for it. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of thinking. Or I could imagine a lot of these folks in Kentucky thinking, look, if we hadn't been given a raw deal by these Democrats and these libtards, we would have a bustling economy. So that's the least the government can do for us, given what they've taken from us. Right. These sorts of ways of thinking. And because, you know, of course, that sort of logic wouldn't apply to people of color. It's not like they've gotten a raw deal by the government. Kathleen writes, the argument my family uses against raising the minimum wage is that it was never meant to support families. What? Minimum wage was allowed, what was to allow students to make a lot of money. I'm not sure where this line of reasoning comes from. Right. It's bizarre. Like, I hear this a lot too. I'm like, that's not even remotely why minimum wage was instituted. It was totally to help people and families to live.
No, but there is this funny thing. It's like, oh yeah, those minimum wage jobs are just for teenagers in the summer. I mean, I hear that all the time. It's sort of like all the minimum wage jobs disappear during the school year, I guess.
Yeah. As though, like, the only jobs that are minimum wage are, like, camp counselors and amusement park workers. Because there's, like, those are the sort of jobs that, you know, students tend to fill just in summertime, only, like, seasonal jobs. But even then, okay.
Yeah.
Gus writes, I love that burger flippers are treated like they aren't skilled labor, but no one shames the guy running the grill at a cookout when the burgers come back overdone.
There you go.
I mean, here's the thing. I've tried, like, I know there's special equipment and stuff, but I've tried making, like, copycat versions of all kinds of fast food stuff. It's not easy, and I'm culinarily adept. So the idea, like, you have to do training. It's hard on your body working on some of these jobs. They're not exactly pleasant. It's like, you know what?
Yeah, but, you know, and to me, though, the quality of the job is irrelevant, right? It really is what you said, that everybody should be able to live, right? I mean, and you know, if one is a religious person, I mean, this is the basic religious standard in society. Like, everyone should have enough. And so, if you exist as a person in society, we should take care of each other. I mean, it's so strange to me that that's a hard concept, that that's viewed as some sort of strangely communist, like out of bounds sort of idea.
And it's amazing. Like, so baked into, I believe baked into what it means to be human is this desire to stand out, to have some prestige in the community, to feel honored. And somehow our society does that through money. And so there's also this sort of fear of, like, well, if everyone's somehow at a level playing field economically, then how do I stand above others? Because the way we do it in our society is through finances and success in a monetary way. But you know what, like, if all of a sudden everyone had the same amount of money and could take care of each other, we have plenty of other ways to measure and stand out and receive honor. And a lot of them are good. The way we treat elders, theoretically, as people who are wise and who have a lot of experience. Way that some people are revered for their kindliness and saintliness, like, we can find other ways of excelling. So don't worry, all the people out there who measure their worth by finances. There's other ways to measure your worth if you're really looking for that. Viv writes, part of it's brainwashing of GOP base for many decades. 3 years ago, a friend, now a former friend, said that I shouldn't receive such expensive health care, Medicaid, and basically called me a welfare queen. Really? My general assistance is $203 per month, $191 in SNAP, plus he wanted me to lose my health care. Because you were raking it in. That's a lot. Despite me having numerous pre-existing conditions. Being the good Catholic that he is, will pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality. You know, this is the other thing. Like, part of the logic is often for Christian folks is wrapped into, like, the government shouldn't be doing this. This is the role of the church. And the churches generally are crap.
But the church doesn't do it.
And suddenly, if people didn't have to pay those taxes and have that extra money, it's not like they're like, well, look at all this extra money. I'm going to give it all to my church for compassion projects. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. So one of the things I did one year with as our stewardship little, we didn't do campaigns anymore because they don't make any difference, but I would always, you know, talk about it. And so I actually did this little analysis of what our church budget should be if everybody tithed based on, you know, the per capita average income in our county, which I know that our church was above that, but I said, well, let's just say even if we were just average. And, you know, so I put up all these numbers on the screen. I did this during worship. It was great. Everybody was just like looking around.
Awkward.
very awkward. Right. Because it turned out that our church budget was, should have been five times what it actually was. And I said, you know, if we actually had that budget, you know, we could do all kinds of mission giving and all kinds of support of people and all sorts of things that, yeah, oftentimes it's talked about that the church should do, not the government should do. I said, the reason that we can't do that is because people don't tithe. Yeah, so it's ridiculous. And, you know, and the other thing about Viv, this example, and it's so, again, tragically stupid, is that even from an economic point of view, it does not make any sense, right? Because if you don't take care of people, then whatever problems they have get worse and get more expensive, right? And so it's way more expensive to hospitalize somebody for diabetes than it is to teach them how to eat well and to give them the resources to be able to eat well. It's way more expensive to put somebody in prison than it is to give them a good education and good job opportunities. So that even from an economic point of view, like even if you said, okay, I don't care about morality, I don't care about any of that, you know, airy fairy crap. I'm a hardcore, you know, economic person. From an economic point of view, taking care of people is a better deal. It pays better.
There's all kinds of studies on also, like, our healthcare system costs more than it needs to because of all this, because of privatization. Yeah. Like, if it was streamlined, it'd be actually, you know, there's all these lies about how more efficient our healthcare system is than, like, these other nationalized systems, which I don't know how people believe that crap. It's just, it's easy enough to say, like, ask Sven and see, like, hey, Sven, how hard is it to get into the hospital and what's the care like? Oh, it's great. Right. Lying commie bastard, Sven. Like, this is, it's, like, no, it's cheaper.
Ole might tell you a different story.
Yeah. For background, in Minnesota, we tell Sven and Ole jokes or Ole and Lena jokes because of our Scandinavian whiteness heritage here. But, you know, this just shows me, like, the concern isn't that it's expensive or it's bad. It's this sort of resenting the idea of someone getting something for free when you had to work hard for it. Yeah. Like, it drives all this stuff.
Yeah. And without critiquing the fact that conception of reality is not true. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that, and that's the other part that we just don't hammer away on enough, right? Is that, again, people that are in minimum wage jobs work harder than people who are billionaires. They actually work harder.
Yeah.
And we just need to be very frank about that.
Kathy writes, one issue is in calling it minimum wage. As long as there is a minimum one, is required to pay, that is what many most will pay. We must change it to a living wage, or as you say, universal basic income, so people can pay basic costs of living. I mean, this is the thing, like, think about how we are taught about the economy and how it's reported on. They talk about the minimum wage, they talk about the stock market. There's, you hardly ever report on, like, I would have to go and do some research to find out what a living wage ought to be in my city. Like, that's not reported on. They don't report on how many hours someone would have to work in order to pay for, like, we don't report on these things because if we did, I think people would be more willing to, like, fight for this stuff if we're more transparent.
All right. We're behind on our comments.
Oh, CK writes, look, all we need to do is pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and work.
Right. 30 jobs, right?
Only 30. You must be doing well. CK writes, capitalism is slavery and death. Tell me how you really feel, CK. But I co-sign on that statement. Mark writes, then there are those that might agree that all should have enough, but still feel like those who don't work for their enough somehow deserve to live a miserable subsistence existence.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to get around that if you have a religion that says if you don't do the right thing, God is going to torture you for all eternity. And so it's kind of like, if it's good enough for God, it's good enough for people. And that's just, we really need to critique that.
Oof, that's a statement. Connie writes, there's also the idea that I've heard stated that church staff should make I hate this. Make less than others doing the same job. Why? Like the worst paid janitorial staff are usually churches. Pound for pound in terms of education for income, like clergy are paid crap generally. Some systems are better than others. But this is disturbing to me how this is true. Marlene writes, yes, all these arguments mentioned against minimum wage are talking points. Constantly reinforced. Not sure how we get people to see beyond what they hear all the time.
Well, we have to start saying other things, and that's one of the things, and Viv is one of the co-chairs of the Minnesota branch of the Poor People's Campaign. And, we've brought that up many times. And I think, the more people that can get the word out about that, because part of what they are doing and have, done a very good job with, is to create other talking points. And we have to create other talking points. I mean, that's why we're doing this transmission. That's why we're talking about this stuff, because you have to have another narrative. Because otherwise you have no, and then that connects to our other favorite topic, which is imagination, right? You can't imagine something that you have no framework for.
This is where, people would poo-poo the ineffectiveness of the Occupy movement, but it was successful in reframing it. Black Lives Matter reframed a lot of the stuff, not just in terms of race, but how race intersects with economics. Mm-hmm. And so there's been a lot of cooperation between Black Lives Matter and different unions, locally on different issues. Mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders, whether you like him or not, was good at reframing a lot of this. And this is traditionally what the job of unions were. They'd agitate to get people to think about, why do you get paid so crap when your boss gets paid so much? You know what your boss does. He doesn't do squat. And so we do have a lot of work cut out for us in kind of reframing all this. Ceres writes, our society is abusive. Even with high-paying positions, there is an implicit assumption that we need to tolerate social abuse and irresponsibility just that comes with being high pay. A lot of social welfare programs make the same assumptions.
I mean, the fact that healthcare is tied into jobs completely creates the dynamic that you're talking about, Ceres, right? I mean, the number of people that feel obligated to stay in jobs where they are treated horribly and abused because if they leave, they're going to lose their healthcare is astronomical. And that's crazy. It's just crazy.
Catherine writes, this is super true in academia too. A couple of years ago, I had a student work job that paid $10 an hour as an adult with an MA in that field. The pushback from many tenured professors against adjunct and grad student organizing against abusive labor practices is perplexing. Totally baked. And there's all sorts of, adjuncts are paid crap. It's part of the reason why, unless you have a PhD, you shouldn't get called doctor. And a doctorate in education or a doctorate in ministry, you're not a real doctor because you haven't suffered enough. There's all kinds of weird. Every system that has hierarchies is going to use resentment to maintain those hierarchies. Is kind of the bottom line. And why resentment leads to fascism. There's the connection for why this is Fascism Friday's topic.
Right.
Marlene writes, but the church does do it. It's way too much to handle. That's why we've become social service workers in our ministries. I mean, there are churches that do it. I'm assuming you're referring to kind of these care programs. A lot of churches do the best with what they can to work as kind of stepping in to where society should be stepping in. But I wouldn't say it's super widespread or successful.
As a percentage of the whole, it's minuscule.
but I don't want to dismiss that there are amazing churches that try to leverage the hell out of things to help mm-hmm. their people and help other people. This one, Sarah's right. So why can't we just offer social support and welfare without the social hazing that and putting up with leadership incompetence?
Right.
I mean,
good question.
That'd be wonderful. That'd be a huge, gigantic step towards the beloved community.
Yeah.
Marlene writes, also way back when a family could survive on one income, women, especially in the church, led so much mission in the community. There's really no one who can afford to give that much time to the community until retirement, which is we're really no longer guaranteed in so many industries. That's yeah. another great point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, capitalism has just continued to extract everything from everybody until, you know, not only are people not making enough to live, but then they've also had extracted all of their time, which, right, was given to so many things to make society more livable. Absolutely.
Gus writes, you mentioned prisons. If you want a bonkers book on the economic rationale behind prisons, Ruth Wilson Gilmore's book, Golden Gulag, is amazing. Thank you, Librarian Gus.
Thank you, Library Gus.
Okay. But guys, Status Quo Joe is trying to give people $15 an hour. Now, this is amazing. Like, people are like, yeah, finally. People have been asking for $15 an hour 10 years ago. So we should be up to, like, asking for 20 to 25.
Yeah,
because you know, that's what is more approaching a living wage.
No,
but yeah, once
especially in urban areas.
Yeah, Joanna writes. I heard from an organizer with the Poor People's Campaign. In order to change the narrative, change the narrator.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
So, who gets to tell the story about what America is and what works and what doesn't work? Like, we give these celebrities and politicians and rich people, who all those people are on the top shelf of society, they're crappy narrators because they don't know what life is really like.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much again. Great comments. Love all of your participation. Love all of you. Thank you for all of the good mornings. When I said that was nice, really appreciated that. And, you know, and I think one of the things here, just as we're closing, the thought that comes to my mind is that the more that we can have this deep-seated sense of our own belovedness and that we are worthy of being taken care of no matter what, mm-hmm. The more we can share that with others. And so that's something we can all meditate on and encourage each other in.
Yeah. Well, and then the flip side, the areas where we feel like we've suffered and struggle, that should cause us to not want other people to do that, to have mm-hmm. to experience that.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. All right. See y'all on Monday.
See you next time, everybody. Bye.